This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Michael K. is on the radio today, and he ain't afraid to say what he's thinking. Is on the radio today. Turn it up, it's time to get on with the show. On 98.7 ESPN Radio.
Howdy, this is Jim Brackmeyer of baseball broadcast fame. It's 3 p.m. and the Michael K. Show starts now on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Michael, from one legend to another, how's about we crack open a couple of pops and call a game together sometime?
Love it, Jim. Just waiting for baseball. And a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Friday. Yes, it's Friday already, January 8th, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, and Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, that is your responsibility. Hope you're all having a good day. We've got a lot of stuff to do today because we've got to make our picks. It's a big wild card weekend. They're calling it Super Wild Card Weekend, and boy, it is super. Three games tomorrow, three games on Sunday, and they're all interesting. They all have pretty good storylines behind them, and we'll get to all of them during the time just on the radio for 5 minutes. We talked about the passing of Tommy Lasorda, a great ambassador for the Dodgers and for baseball overall. A great American life, dies at the age of 93. Another Hall of Famer leaves us in what's been an awful stretch of time. And we'll talk more about Tommy as we move on. We do want to accentuate football today. But I just want to, again, what we're going to do here is a slight tiptoe around the Kyrie Irving situation. Because there is not any definitive information on why Kyrie did not play last night. Now, without Kyrie and without Durant, the Nets completely annihilated the team with the best record in basketball coming in, the 7-1 Philadelphia 76ers.
It's not fair.
The Nets are loaded. They really are. To be able to blow out a really good team without two of the best players in basketball shows you how loaded they are. And remember, no Dinwiddie either, because he's out for the season with the ACL tear. So, arguably, their three best players, not even arguably, their three best players out, and they manhandle the Sixers. Now, we know why Durant is out, and there's a chance that he could play on Sunday, because he keeps testing negative for COVID. He has never tested positive during this, but because of contact tracing, somebody in his immediate group around him, family, they did test positive, so the NBA rules say that you have to be shut down for a week to 10 days and continue to test negative. So he can actually possibly play on Sunday. But right before the game last night, when we had Frank Isola on, word came down that Kyrie Irving was not going to play. And he's not going to play tonight either. The Nets are in Memphis. And it's interesting because he supposedly sent a mass text to his teammates that he wasn't going to play, never spoke to his coach, and Nash admitted, I have not spoken to him, I reached out with a text, I have not heard back. So to this point, the Nets have not announced, other than that it was a private issue, why Kyrie Irving didn't play. And there is a website that covers basketball, I think it's called The Heavy, is that it, Peter?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called The Heavy. And it's got some legitimacy in NBA circles. Reported last night that Kyrie didn't play because he just didn't want to play. Now, we can't go up and in on this because I don't think it's fair and I think it's irresponsible until we know for sure. It could be something terrible that happened to somebody in his family, God forbid. But I will say this with just a caveat. If, in fact, that's true, that he just didn't feel like playing, or that opens up a can of worms. I mean, there are days that I just don't feel like working. There are days I just don't feel like doing the show. I said it at the time. Don and Peter know. They know me well. They know me as well as anybody. I don't want to do the show Wednesday. My head wasn't in it. The world was on fire. Nobody knew what was happening, and I was distracted. But you know why I did it? Because it's my job. That's my job. I did it because it's my job. And now if you asked me and you injected me with truth serum and said, did you want to work? No. There was times that I thought up to like 5 minutes before we went on the air, I was going to say, listen, I can't do this, guys. But I didn't think that's not the way I'm raised. But I will say this. You have the right not to work. But Kyrie Irving makes over $30 million a year from the Nets. And if you're injured, you should be paid. And if it's part of load management so you can help them win down the stretch and be stronger, you should be paid. But if you decide, I don't want to work today. So I think Kyrie makes, what, $36 million a year? Well, let's divide 72 into 36, and he doesn't get paid. If you don't feel like working, you don't get paid. Again, I'm tiptoeing around this because I don't know if that's the exact reason. But if that is the reason, I'm sorry, it's not good enough. There's a lot of people that don't want to work. There's a lot of people that don't feel like doing their jobs every day, especially when you have a job in the public eye when you have to be on. So if, in fact, there's any legitimacy to this, well, the Nets have to deal with it with Kyrie themselves. It's not for us to solve, but they shouldn't pay him. He shouldn't be paid. You don't get paid for not working.
And we had our pre-show meeting, and I was in lockstep with you just because I don't want to sit here and bash the guy, and then we find out something devastating happened to his family. So we don't have enough information to go by. But I will say this. What could have happened to him or his family or his friends or his life that you let the team know just hours before the game? No reason is given. Your coach reaches out to you. You don't reach back. You know, so it's got to be something pretty serious because in all the things that have happened to you, me, Peter, during the course of our times working together, we've had some pretty devastating things happen to us. Loss of life, illness. I don't remember there was ever a time that I couldn't reach out to my boss to tell him I wasn't working or return his phone call or his text if he wanted to know some information. So that's what makes it kind of difficult for me to support him because really, what handful of things, Peter, could have happened where he just leaves everybody in the dark like that?
So first of all, I respect Michael's approach on tiptoeing because I think too often sports media, especially talk show hosts, don't care and they just start making these strong statements and then you have to walk it back when you find out what's really going on. And obviously, first and foremost here, we all just hope that, you know, everything's okay and Kyrie's family is safe, etc. But it is hard for me to imagine the scenario in which it makes sense for the Nets to not have an answer. And I thought Nash, I got to tell you, it's an early test for Nash. I thought he handled it really well. I thought he did a good job talking through it without making it look like a huge situation. Obviously, it helped that they went out and played great and won. It probably could have been a tougher conversation if they lost by 30 without him. But I don't understand what it's going to be where they wouldn't have an answer on it. And let's just hope for the best. It's a tough situation because you hope that it's nothing. But if it's nothing, well, then it's something.
Right, exactly.
Because what's going on with Kyrie? That's the hard part.
And even if it's something, I'll tell you a really personal story. So when my mom passed away, me and my sister, we're in the room with her when she takes her last breath. And I hope people don't have to go through it. Don has gone through it. I've gone through it twice. And we do our grieving. And I step out into the hallway. And I call up John Filippelli and say, I'm not going to be able to do the game tonight.
Yeah.
And I called up Tim McCarthy and said, I'm not going to be able to do the radio show. So there's no lower point in my life than losing my mom or my dad. And I still had a responsibility to the people that employ me not to leave them out in the lurch. So there's nothing, there is absolutely nothing that could be worse than losing a parent that you couldn't find a minute to make a phone call. And the thing that does resonate with me with this is that it's a total lack of respect to Steve Nash. A total lack. Now, I don't know if he called up the owner of the team. I don't know if he called up Sean Marks. But the Nets, as an organization, they do not know other than that it's personal. Okay, so what could it be worse than the death of a loved one or the sickness of a loved one where you can't carve out 30 seconds to make a phone call? And, I mean, the other day we spoke of the wondrous athletic talent of Kyrie Irving. He's otherworldly when you watch him play. But he's a little bit to handle, man. He's not your everyday guy. He's a little bit to handle. So I'm curious to see what the exact reason was, but I don't know if there's enough of a reason, as I just told you my personal story, that there's enough of a reason not to give an explanation to your boss. Sorry.
I saw a tweet from Kendrick Perkins about, you know, if this was about, supposedly what happened was about what happened in Washington on Wednesday, you know, and if that's the case, he has every reason, you know, to be fed up about social justice, etc. Guys, this is what happened Wednesday affected everybody in different ways. And
on both sides.
On whatever
side you're on.
Yeah, you were affected. Although, I'll be honest, I believe there's only one side of this issue in this case. But everyone had the right to be upset about what they witnessed, right? It was upsetting to see that those images and what it represented. That said, I feel like it's a bit of a stretch for that to be a reason for one player to take off a game.
Right. The rest of the guys went through the same stuff.
The whole world, everyone's affected. Like, if that's what it was, and again, we have no idea that it is, I don't agree with Kendrick's take on that. That would be the symbolic gesture of standing up against social injustice? I wouldn't understand it.
But if you're making a gesture to stand up against social injustice, then wouldn't you want the world to know that's the reason you're sitting out?
I would think a statement would come out right away.
Right, so there would be no secret. I am not, after what happened on Wednesday, I just can't stomach playing. I'm sitting out. And you can kill me if you want, or disagree with if you want, but that's the reason. The Nets would know. He's on social media. He could have sent out a tweet. Because that's the whole reason. If you're trying to stand up and you're trying to make change, then you let people know what you're doing. To just feel, I don't feel like playing, and not giving us a reason. And then later on, if he says, well, the reason was what happened on Wednesday, then why didn't you tell us right away? Wouldn't that have had value to tell us that that's the reason that you're sitting out?
And I wish I could spin the camera around. I don't want to lose the camera the way it's set up. But where I do the show, I have a TV that could, like, spin out a little bit. And I put it on yes so I could see Don and Peter's expression, although it's quite delayed, but I get a feel for, you know. And on Wednesday, I had on CNN. And I found myself locked into what was going on CNN. And Peter could have said, by the way, Michael is one of the most repulsive human beings that I've ever met in my life. And I think he's a disgraceful person. I found myself going, yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, I wasn't locked into what they were saying.
You had to have heard it because that was word for word what he said at one point.
Well, I DVR the show and I play it back. But so I turned it off and I went back to, you know, just watching us on Yes. But as I said, who wanted to work on Wednesday watching what we watched, the images flashing across the screen? Who wanted to work? Kendrick Perkins is wrong. That's not a good enough reason. Everybody in the world felt like that. Every one of his teammates felt like that. They all went to work because, you know what? That's their job.
I understand that, but in this time, Michael, I think sometimes you gotta cut a little slack if somebody wants to show sort of. But that's my point. It's like when Lennon had the bet in Montreal. He didn't just do it. He told you why he did it, for peace. You know, whenever somebody marches, they give you the reason why they march. Whenever somebody protests, they give you the reason. Otherwise, why are you doing it? So if this was some sort of a stand against social injustice, it was a stand on what was happening at the Capitol on Wednesday, then you have to let the world know it. Why would you allow yourself to get beat up for 48 hours, not knowing the reason, and then come out and tell us that was the reason? So I'm not going to sit here in this day and age and tell people you've got to fight through it. Some people can't fight through it. And I wouldn't have looked lesser at you if you had just said, I'm not going to work. I don't want to get into that, well, this person's stronger than that person kind of deal. Because everybody deals with things in their own way. And unfortunately, Michael, in the NBA, you do have the ability to ask out. They, you know, you constantly have load management. They strategically take you out of games. So I guess in the NBA, it's okay to go to management and say, I don't feel like playing today. I want to protest what's happening down in D.C. And you would have been given a pass. But by not telling anybody, then I don't know what exactly was accomplished.
I kind of feel this way, though. Even if you, like, if you were so unnerved by what happened in D.C., you don't get paid. I'm sorry.
Well,
you don't get paid. That is your job. I've had people, I've seen baseball players that were losing family members to terrible sickness, and they went between the lines and they played. And then after the game was over, they tended to business. I'm sorry. If you don't play, if you're healthy and you choose not to play, and it's not a load management situation, you don't get paid. And if the Nets keep, again, we're trying to tiptoe around it, but
well,
if the Nets let this guy continue to do these things.
Let me jump in here with an update. Anthony Puccio, who writes for the Association, verified account, 20,000 followers, NBA writer.
Right.
Quote, Kyrie is very upset about everything that is going on in this country. A source close to Kyrie Irving's camp, so that's a little tenuous, told the Association that Irving did not play because he's protesting against the riots at the U.S. Capitol and the Breonna Taylor verdict.
You know what? It's going to turn me into the bad guy here, but both of those things bothered me too. But he's not, he's a basketball player. His job is to play basketball. Every other one of his teammates did. I'm sorry, that's not right.
But at least that's up for interpretation, right?
He couldn't tell Steve Nash that?
You can't deny the fact that there have been plenty of people that pulled walkouts or didn't work on certain days. I mean, Peter, right, at Hot 97, you did something very similar during the Black Lives Matter protests. So there are people that are not doing it out of laziness. They're not doing it out of because they'd rather do something else, that they feel like this is a way to make a statement against what's going on there.
But how do you do it without any words about the
statement? But when you do that without making the statement, like, you're not telling us why, then I'm sorry, if I wanted to go sit on a billboard outside Madison Square Garden and I'm going to sit there until the Giants win the Super Bowl, okay, then that's a reason. But if I just go out there and don't tell anybody and freeze to death, then I'm an idiot, right? I mean, you got to tell people why you're doing what you're doing. To pry it out of him with reports and all that, and then eventually I guess he'll issue some sort of a statement after missing two games. Well, why would somebody needs to explain to me why you would not let that be known immediately to everyone so that there could be some benefit to you sitting out?
So that report is actually true. He just didn't feel like playing. Because who are you protesting to by not playing? Even Draymond Green said, I'm sorry, us not playing basketball is not going to stop what's going on in the world. He's right. And it gives you more of a forum. If Kyrie felt the way he felt, and obviously there's reasons to feel the way he felt, then go to the arena and talk with the media and tell them exactly what you're feeling. But missing yesterday's game, he's going to miss tonight's game with Memphis. Well, why is that okay?
It shouldn't be okay because, again, you're not even given the reason. We still don't know the exact reason. These are just reports. But if it comes out that that's the reason he couldn't feel like, he didn't feel like playing, all right, I disagree with it, but hey, that's the way he decided to show his dissatisfaction with what was going on with those two particular subjects. And we saw that. Michael, we saw similar situations happen in the bubble where games were postponed, players refused to play. It's not that out of the realm, okay? But when you don't tell anybody why you're doing it, that to me is inexcusable. What would be the reason not to say? And don't tell us because, he doesn't have to tell you anything. Well, he kind of does. He's a public figure who's obviously protesting something, trying to make a statement against something. Then you have to tell us what that's about. And you don't even have to have a press conference. You're on social media. Send it out. Or you tell Steve Nash, you tell the Brooklyn Nets, tell the world when they ask me why I'm not playing because of what happened in D.C. and Kenosha. How difficult is that to do?
And also, you had time to text all of your teammates. That was probably a mass text. But you didn't have time to talk to Steve Nash? Again, total lack of respect to Steve Nash. Steve Nash has nothing to do with what happened in D.C. or in Kenosha. Nothing. He happens to be the coach of your team. It's a lack of respect to the man who's running the team. But I don't think it's right.
See, now we can even dig deeper, and Peter was kind of alluding to this, too, is that, never mind it's a disrespect to Steve Nash, it's almost as if to kind of admit, hey, listen, you only have the job because I want you to have the job. So I don't have to tell you anything. I'm running the team. KD's running the team. My teammates are running the team. That's why he let his teammates know, because he probably doesn't feel like the coach is any kind of authority figure.
Let me ask you both this. When's the right time for him to go back? When's he going to feel okay to go back?
I don't know.
Because it's still, what happened in D.C. is still unfolding.
Right.
And the Breonna Taylor situation is something that will go on for a long time. When's it okay? What Kyrie has to understand, because you can even see it when he said he wasn't going to talk to the media. You know, it's his art. No. It's your job. And if you feel that you're above the job because there are more important things in this world, I get it. There are times that I feel, what am I doing? Am I really moving the needle in terms of humanity? But this is my job. So don't play basketball. Put all your time and effort into righting the wrongs of society. Do it. You can't just leave your teammates.
But he has another, Kyrie has another issue working against him.
And what is that?
That he has never, over the last 3 years, he's not exactly a picture of, oh my God, this guy loves the game of basketball. He has been called into question already about how much he really wants to do it. Guys, there were questions about whether Kyrie could have come back sooner from those injuries, but since KD was gone, it was like, well, I might as well get this handled, and I'll just go ahead and chill this season. And those questions lingered in Boston, and then the team was better without him. So what I'm saying is, if you had a LeBron James, a guy who just does not miss games unless he absolutely has to, if a guy like that doesn't show up, I think you're quicker to believe whatever the story is.
Good point.
With Kyrie, there are questions about, do you really love this game, and are you all in for these teammates? And who cares what we say? We're going to talk no matter what at Sports Talk Radio. The real story is, how does this affect the Brooklyn Nets? They'll tell us right now everything's all good, blah, blah, blah. But you're telling me Caris LeVert and Harris and the players who are making this team go, are they really going to be down to be background players on this two-man show if one man skips out?
I don't even think that KD will be down with this.
But
And also, you mentioned LeBron. There's nobody more socially conscious and relevant and important and does things and does the right things and helps send kids to college. He was able to play. He played yesterday.
But we can actually get into a debate on whether it was right for him not to play or not. I just can't even see how it's even defensible not to tell anybody. I really can't. I defy anyone to call up or tweet me and give me a reason why it was okay not to mention why.
Also, we could also look through the history of professional sports and find out how many times, when God forbid something tragic happens, that the team doesn't know that's what happened. They always know. I mean, guys, let's be real. Michael just said it. Oh, we've all gone through some of the worst moments in our life while doing the show. Within the first phone calls I've made during the most tragic moments of my life were to my coworkers and bosses to be like, this is what's going on. Just kind of part of life. So I don't think it's that. Thank God. I don't think it's about a tragedy. I think it's about a decision like this. And I just hope he can grow up and learn that if you want to make these awesome statements, you have to plan them out in a way where they're impactful. And not just negative to your teammates.
Because then it's just a selfish move, right? Now you're not doing anything to help anybody. It's just about you. But what a statement by Brooklyn last night, though. Because, you're playing without your two best players. You go up against the best team in basketball. Maybe that was a nice response, right? Like, hey, we're not going to let this guy drag us down, all right? that we can be a great team without him. I think that was a nice statement by them last night.
All right, let's hear from you. This is obviously, there are many layers to this. I don't think it's an easy call, but I do think it's an easy call to make that easy call. That I do believe. And I also don't think that one man should feel that he is the conscience of the NBA when everybody else played and you didn't. There are other teams, the Milwaukee Bucks, I forget who they were playing, they all took a knee.
Was it Boston?
It might have been Boston. They took a knee. Okay, so that was their way of saying, we don't like what happened in Kenosha. But to just not show up when every other player felt probably just as crestfallen as you, my wife and I were glued in front of the TV till 3 in the morning. We were dumbfounded by what was unfolding in front of our eyes. I came to work. We'll be back.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, welcome back to the show, everybody. It is December 39th, 2020, as the weirdness of 2020 has not dissipated.
Yeah.
With the turning of the calendar to 2021. So that being said, the sadness also has not dissipated as Tommy Lasorda, Hall of Famer, legendary Dodger manager, played for the Dodgers as well, passed away. He had been in the hospital since before Christmas and then was sent home a day or two ago and then suffered a cardiac episode at his home, was rushed to the hospital where he passed away at the age of 93. I mentioned this at the start of the soft open of the show. Really loved his life. He loved being Tommy Lasorda. And when you met Tommy and you were in the presence of Tommy, everybody, it seems, in the world, Don has met these people, Peter's met these people, everybody has an off day. Everybody is not on all the time. Tommy Lasorda, every time you met him, was Tommy Lasorda. He was on all the time. Two World Series titles as a Dodger manager, two-time manager of the year, spent 67 years in the Dodger organization, a great ambassador for the Dodgers and for baseball in general, managed or coached the U.S. Olympic team where they got a gold medal. He did it all and loved every single minute of it. There's no good time or right time or enough time for a person to pass away. Because 93 years is a great run. But he had always said that he wanted to live to 100 and he wanted to see the Dodgers win one more championship. And the last baseball game that he ever saw, in person by the way, was the Dodgers winning the championship. So that obviously would had meant a lot. He fell 7 years short of 100. He certainly battled and made it to 93 despite some health issues. And he passes away. Now, Tim Kirchen was on with Bart and Hahn earlier, and this is what he said about what made Lasorda so special.
He loved his players. He was unbelievably positive at all times with his guys. He used to tell them, no matter what, we're going to win this game. Look at the 88 season. They had no right beating the Mets in the postseason that year, and they got by a great Mets team. They were a great team, the Dodgers, let's face it. But they had no right beating the A's in the World Series in 88, but Tommy's positive influence, not to mention the greatness of Oral Hershiser and Kirk Gibson and others, took them there. But that's who Tommy was. He was just unfailingly positive about everything. And again, the part about him that people miss is what a fighter he was, how competitive he was at everything. And sadly, after he came back from the World Series, he was checked into the hospital and it was very serious. I was told he might not last another day. And not only did he go well beyond that, he got himself out of the hospital and went home, which is where he died. That's the kind of fighter that Tommy Lasorda was.
And Tim also went on to tell a Vin Scully story about Lasorda.
Vin Scully tells the best Lasorda story, that he interviewed Lasorda. Tommy, of course, was following Walter Alston, a Hall of Fame manager, as the manager of the Dodgers. And Alston said, do you have any worries about following Walter Alston? And Tommy said, I'm not worried about who I follow. I'm worried about the guy who's going to follow me. And 20 years later, Tommy Lasorda was done as the Dodger manager after 4 pennants and 2 World Series, an unprecedented amount of pictures taken and everything else. He was a Hollywood manager. He was a celebrity manager. He was also a great manager, and he was never lacking in confidence. As that story tells, I'm worried about the guy who's going to follow me.
The guy knew everybody. If you walk into his office at Dodger Stadium in the 70s or the 80s, who was sitting there? Frank Sinatra. He knew everybody. Yeah. He was a great motivational speaker. He was a great after-dinner speaker. Great with stories, great with people. Would spend hours signing autographs in the broiling sun of spring training because he felt that that was part of his job, is to spread the love of the Dodgers and of baseball and the gospel of baseball. So baseball lost one of the great ones today in Tommy Lasorda, and a great, great American life, passing away at the age of 93.
That's a great line by Tim Kurchin. He was a celebrity manager. Yeah, and there's plenty of managers, and certainly he was one in an era where if you were a baseball fan, you knew when Baltimore was coming to town, you were going to see Earl Weaver. And when Cincinnati or Detroit was coming to town, it was Sparky Anderson. You know, it was Billy Martin, wherever he was, with the Yankees or the A's or the Tigers or the Twins or whatever. That people actually went to the ballpark to see these guys. They argued with umpires. Lou Piniella was probably the last of the great arguers. They were personalities. They made the sport fun. And the couple of things I remember about Tommy Lasorda, of course, the ill-fated question from Paul Olden about Dave Kingman's performance. Which
I wish we could play it. We just couldn't.
What are you? You're asking me what I think about Kingman's performance, and it was just, but it was so Tommy. And the other one, I don't know if you remember this, Michael. He might have stole this line from somebody, but I always attribute it to Tommy Lasorda. You know, the Mets lost that 88 series, but the Mets had a great come from behind win in Game One. They were down 2-0 in the ninth. Mets scored 3 runs to take Game One. So in the pregame for Game Two, he's being interviewed, and they asked him, "How did you sleep last night?" After a loss like that, he said, I slept like a baby. And they go, what do you mean you slept like a baby? Oh, I tossed and turned and cried all night. Like it's such a great line from him. And it's gone. It's over. It's done. You know, the way baseball is now, that you can't argue with umpires. The managers are all kind of just puppets and yes men for management. Nobody has a personality like this anymore. You could be a diehard baseball fan and probably couldn't name 6 managers in Major League Baseball because they kind of are in the shadows. We grew up at a time, Michael, where the manager was bigger than most of the players. You know, as the managers were there for decades, and they had things to say, and they had ways that they managed. You know, some played small ball like Whitey Herzog. Some played, you know, 3-run home runs like Earl Weaver. You know, Tommy, some of the great highlights of that Yankee World Series was when, was it 77 or 78, when Reggie Jackson stuck out his hip and knocked the ball away at first base, and Tommy screaming and yelling. Those days are gone. It's a shame.
Don, I almost wish you had a list today so we could do the most iconic coaches in sports history. But Lasorda's up there. I can't think of a bigger manager ever in baseball for crossover star appeal. In fact, in sports, the only person in my lifetime who I can think of as being on the same level of crossover star from their sport being coach is probably Mike Ditka, and I sort of may have passed him. I mean, it's something of yesteryear. A star like that who's a manager of a team. He was referenced in music and culture and film and comedy and commercials. He was just an icon.
Now, Vince Scully said that there are 2 things about Tommy I will always remember. The first is his boundless enthusiasm. Tommy would get up in the morning full of beans and maintain that as long as he was with anybody else. The other was his determination. He was a fellow with limited ability, and he pushed himself to be a very good AAA pitcher. He never quite had that something extra that makes a major leaguer, but it wasn't because he didn't try. On his desk was Dodger Stadium was his address, but every ballpark was his home. And he also played a role in another Hall of Famer. He was good friends with Mike Piazza's dad. And that's the only reason the Dodgers drafted Mike Piazza, I think, in the 62nd round as a favor to Tommy Lasorda. And Mike Piazza became a Hall of Famer. So, amazing baseball life. And he's from Pennsylvania, by the way. He was actually born in Norristown, Pennsylvania. So many people think of him, you know, L.A. He was really L.A., but he's a kid from Norristown, Pennsylvania who made it big. Made it big. I know Bobby Valentine's hurting today. They were very, very close.
Yeah.
Friend and mentor, 52 years. And he tweeted out, "Tommy, no one will ever fill the void you left. Thank you for everything, R.I.P.
You know, when somebody dies, so a lot of the times you're sad for them because there was still so much life to live, or maybe there's certain things they couldn't accomplish. When a guy like Tommy Lasorda dies, you feel bad for the people that were close to him because he squeezed every bit of life out. Right, there's nothing he didn't do. He accomplished so much. So you don't celebrate that somebody passes away, but you could celebrate a life well lived. You know, and the people that you really feel bad for, the people that were close to him that can't experience that joy anymore.
I will tell you this: if you're ever around Tommy, he didn't do this in public, okay? But boy, he had a salty mouth. I mean, he could really curse with the best of them. And you know, Don mentioned the Paul Olden, Dave Kingman thing. One of his more memorable rants, and you could find this on the internet, came in July of 1982. Kurt Bevacqua of the San Diego Padres was hit by Dodger pitcher Tom Niedenfuhr. Bevacqua called Lasorda that fat little Italian. And it wasn't Bevacqua who got hit, it was Joe LaFay. Now, Lasorda denied ordering Niedenfuhr to hit LaFay, and then he unleashed a series of F-bombs. "If I ever did," Lasorda said, "I certainly would make him throw at a bleeping 130 hitter like LaFay, or bleeping Bevacqua, who couldn't hit water if he fell out of a bleeping boat." And there's Tommy Lasorda. Love the game. Love the game. Now, there was a story yesterday. I mean, we do have to address this, and I wonder if it's going to have any legs whatsoever. Some of the legendary characters in baseball are the clubhouse guys. They know all the secrets, every single one of them. They know everything that a player is doing. And there's a guy that was the visiting clubhouse manager at Angel Stadium for over 40 years. And his name was Bubba Harkins. And I guess he had this great potion that he came up with that was essentially illegal, but players wanted him to make it, that would help you get a better grip on the ball. And visiting players from around baseball asked him for this magic concoction that he had. And some of the Angel players would meet in the hallway between the visiting and home dugout or home clubhouse and ask him for this potion as well. Well, Major League Baseball is trying to clean up on all kind of foreign substances. And the Angels ended up firing Bubba Harkins. Again, who'd been there since he was a kid. I think he started when he was 15. So he's 55 now. And he's suing the Angels for over $4 million. And I guess his thing is that I'm just doing what all the players ask me to do. And the Angels asked me to do so. You're making me a scapegoat. And one of the things in the lawsuit is he has a text from Garrett Cole. "Hey, Bubba, I'm going to need some of that stuff because some of the stuff I've been using is not as effective." So now Garrett Cole's been implicated, and some of the biggest pitchers in baseball use this as well. Now, you could say that somebody's cheating or not. Pitchers feel like they need a foreign substance to get a better grip on the ball and have better control. Now, those that aren't pitchers will say, well, that's nonsense. They just want to do it for the spin rate.
Right.
Because the better grip you have, the better spin rate you have. The better spin rate you have, the more swings and misses that you have. So we'll see if there's any implication for guys like Garrett Cole and the other names on the list as well, and if Bubba Harkins will, in fact, win this lawsuit. But it's very, very interesting where a visiting clubhouse guy is just doing what he's asked by the players, and he's the guy who gets used as a scapegoat, and the Angels wiped their hands of it and fired him, and now he's suing them. And obviously, when you're in a lawsuit, you're going to bring out every gun you have, and already one of the things is a text from Garrett Cole, "I'm going to need more of that stuff." So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
See, that's, you know what's crazy about that, Michael? I never heard anything about that. Like, that was never on my radar. Was it yours, that there are pitchers out there that might be cheating to get a better grip? And we've seen guys get suspended because of pine tar.
No, that was always the thing with why do pitchers become better with the Astros? And there was always some kind of a theory. Well, obviously, it's because somehow they're increasing their spin rate. And
right.
Trevor Bauer wrote a story for the Players Tribune where he said, I've worked on increasing my spin rate forever, and there's certain ways that you could do it, and then only to a point, and then to really increase the RPM, the revolutions per minute or even per second, there's got to be another substance that gives you a better snap on the baseball. So Bauer, you know, they ran that story right. again today, and it looks like he was right, that there is something untoward about it, but is it untoward when every big pitcher seems like they were involved?
Well, see, here's the thing, is that now you're circling back to the steroid era, where is it okay because everybody was doing it anyway? But it sounds like it's the Wild West, Michael. Pitchers are cheating, hitters are cheating, everybody's taking substances. I mean, so at some point you just say to yourself, I guess it's all equal. Everybody's finding some way to cheat, whether it's putting the foot outside the batter's box or cheating here or there. Like, everybody seemed to try to find a way to get their edge. And it sounds like the pitchers and the hitters and everybody seems to be doing something.
I've talked to a lot of pitchers in all my years, and they say this stuff should be legal, especially on cold weather days.
Right.
I mean, remember Michael Pineda had a glob of pine tar on his neck? He said pitchers, a lot of guys have told me, we really need it. Otherwise, the ball's going to fly out of our hands and more guys are going to get hit. It does improve control, but the fact that it improves spin rate makes you a much better pitcher. Now every scout is looking for spin rate. So if you can create more spin on the baseball, there's going to be more swings and misses. That's why there's so many strikeouts in baseball, and that's been the success of the Houston Astros staff as well. So we'll see if there's anything of it, but I did want to talk about it, and that's simmering right now, the Bubba Harkins story with the lawsuit. I also saw something else, and it's become very interesting. If you're the owner of a team, the last thing I think I would want to do is alienate my star. And there are two stars for the Houston Texans, J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson. Fair?
Yeah.
One's on the offensive side, one's on the defensive side.
Mm-hmm.
And the owner of the team, McNair, after they got rid of Bill O'Brien, they told the quarterback, we will confer with you and talk with you and about, you know, who we're going to hire. Well, they hired this guy, Casario, who's out of the New England tree, just like Bill O'Brien was. And Watson wants them to hire Eric Bieniemy. They completely never even spoke with Watson. So now they're going to try to somehow salvage this relationship, but there are heavy rumors out there. Watson wants to be traded. Now, if you're the Jets, you've got all this draft capital. You've got a quarterback that you could give them. You got the number two pick in the draft. Would you trade all of that for Deshaun Watson?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Deshaun Watson's just 25.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting a prime 25. I mean, he could be there for 10 years.
Yeah. This is everything that you're hoping for. Now, you could draft Fields and he could turn out to be better, but it's still an if. This is a guy that's played in the league. And you also, the other aspect of this is you could wait until, you know, what the coach wants to do, but does Deshaun Watson being on your team, you know, maybe sell a coach that's on the fence? Hey, I want to coach this guy. I mean, they're showing the stats now. In a year where the team won four games, he threw 33 touchdown passes and seven interceptions.
Almost 5,000 yards.
Well, yeah,
and 70% completion.
I mean, that's the reason that's why J.J. Watt's apologizing to him for the year they had, because the defense was atrocious.
So what do you give? All right, so Sam would go, so they have a quarterback to play next year, right? So Sam, the number two pick, do you give the first-round pick next year too?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know, though, because do you have enough pieces there? Can you afford to keep dipping into
See, that's a good
drafts?
Question. Because well, if you're going to give away all the draft picks and you got yourself a great quarterback,
he's still in the Sam Darnold position. It's still Braxton Berrios and Jameson Crowder.
Yeah, but he's still...
That's it.
Yeah, but they've got a lot of money in free agency that they can fill some holes there. And yeah, you're giving up a first round pick next year too, but you still have a ton of other picks that you could use, and maybe Houston throws you back
I don't think you'd have to.
Another
I don't know that you'd have to though. Because the number two pick is such a huge piece this year, considering there are two quarterbacks now that people think are franchise changing, potentially. You don't think it could be enough to give Sam the pick this year and a second rounder next year?
But here's the problem. You know, we're making like you're giving them Sam. What good's Sam going to be if they're going to draft Fields with the second overall pick?
Right. Good point.
See, they could end up spending Sam for draft picks.
Right. Yeah, so that's what you do. You trade them this year's number two, next year's number one.
See, but if I'm the Jets, what I'd want to do, since they're going to pick probably Fields with the second pick, I'd give them the draft pick and keep Sam. Then I'd have Watson, and then I trade Sam and get back some of the draft capital I'm giving the Texans.
That's what I think, because you're only going to probably get a second round pick for him. But you know, if you can get a second round pick, and then you trade the first round pick next year, you got a gift to get. I mean, this clears up your quarterback situation, and then you can use some free agency to get them weapons. And yeah, you'll be without a first round pick next year, but you're hoping that first round pick's going to probably be, you know, somewhere 15 or lower, because you might be able to jump in and win some games next year with a legit quarterback and spending money in free agency and a legit head coach. And does Deshaun Watson win over and make the Jets a more attractive place for a head coach to go?
And you know, it's interesting too. Mac Wake 316 just tweeted, and it does. I mean, we're concentrating on the Jets. Not just the Jets, he said. Why shouldn't the Giants go and trade whatever necessary and Jones if Houston wants him to get Watson? Already have the defense, good weapons, developing offensive line, and Saquon back.
Well, unless you want to put Saquon in the deal.
Well, they kind of made it sound like that's not what they're considering.
Well, I'm just saying, what would the Giants give? Because the Giants are not going to have a high, aren't going to have a number two pick. So what are you giving them?
Oh, right.
Is that our thinking music?
Yeah.
No,
it's hard to think.
Fat hands.
Oh, God.
It's fat hands music.
So their chairman and CEO, Cal McNair, said, "I've come to understand that it's been reported that Deshaun Fields left out of the process. But he and I had several visits, and I understood his point of view before meeting with candidates. I've reached out to Deshaun about Nick's hire, and I look forward to him getting back to me when he returns from his vacation." Now, yesterday, Adam Schefter reported that Watson offered input on potential GM candidates, but the Texans did not consider or consult with those endorsed by their quarterback. And then Watson tweeted Tuesday, "Some things never change."
Well, how much do you have to let him know? Does he have to make the decision for you?
But you know what? Just to humor him, Don?
Yeah.
Interview some of the guys that he said?
Yeah, I know. I agree with you, but could this just be an overreaction because he wants out?
I don't know. He's in the middle of a long-term deal. It's hard to make those trades. But if you could, both the Giants and the Jets would have to think about it, because he's better than both of these players that they have. He's better. Daniel Jones will never be as good as Deshaun Watson. Might be a good quarterback, not going to be this good. We know Sam's not going to be this good. Deshaun Watson is a transformative quarterback. On a team, the type of team that he was on, robbed of one of his best weapons because Bill O'Brien had a brain cramp, and still put up nearly 5,000 yards, more than any quarterback in football. That's pretty darn impressive. All right, we'll take your phone calls on this. We make our picks a little bit later on. Big Wild Card Weekend coming up. Ryan Clark at 5:30. Our picks at 5:45. It's Kay, LeGreco, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Welcome back to the Michael K. Show, everybody. Let's go back to the calls. Let's go to Joe in Toms River. Joe.
Hey, what's up, guys? Love the show. Girlfriend's even starting to get stuff.
Really? Outstanding.
Yeah. But I had a question. I wanted to know what you guys thought about the Dolphins offering a trade for Tua and both of their first-round picks for Deshaun Watson.
And it's funny, one of their first-round picks happens to be the Texans' first-round pick that they got in the Tunsil deal. I think the Dolphins are in play on that. I really do. I mean, we're just talking about the Giants and the Jets because it's a New York show, but what team wouldn't want him? The Bears would want him. The 49ers would want him. The Dolphins, he would fit perfectly, and they certainly have the draft capital to get him. And if the football team and if the Texans actually like Tua, that might be something that we consider. I mean, it's incumbent upon McNair to calm this down. You don't want to lose this quarterback.
No, but again, all those teams need quarterbacks, and none of them have what the Jets have.
Now, Incarcerated Bob is a very smart man.
Very.
Hit me with a very smart thought, which is that Watson has a no-trade clause. If he has people he's specifically interested in being a head coach, Jets should get out ahead of it, figure that out, and talk to those coaches.
I don't think you hire a coach simply for a quarterback.
Well,
I mean,
what if it's someone you're already interested in? What if it's not that hard? It's someone you're already thinking about, but you also know Watson's into it. Listen, if we're talking about a franchise-changing quarterback, I'm not saying you hire a coach he likes that you have no interest in, but why not be led a direction? Who cares?
Let's go to Nick and Brick.
Oh, what's up, Nick? What's up, boys? How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Big Nick?
Marvelous. Big Nick, yeah. All right, listen. Here's the deal. Here's the trade. Jets get it done immediately. I think it makes sense for both sides, okay? Hear me out. So the Jets give up the number 2 overall pick, okay? You're going to give up the second round pick, which is the 32nd pick in the draft, right? So you're essentially going to get basically 2 number 1, first round picks. You're going to give up next year's first round pick and Sam Darnold. Now, the guy that said it before, he said give up the Miami's first two first round picks and Tua. I think Darnold is light years better than Tua. What do you guys think?
Yeah, but I don't see why they'd want Sam or Tua. They're
right,
drafting
they've
a quarterback.
Got the second pick, yeah.
Got the second overall pick. They're going to pick Fields. So why would I want Sam or Tua?
The only reason you take Sam is to turn around and trade him.
Yeah, it sounds attractive to throw that into the package, but why would Houston want to bring in another young quarterback when they're going to draft a young quarterback?
Let's go to Benjamin in Valley. What's up, Benjamin?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
I love your show. Big fan. Peter, you got a great shirt on today.
Oh, thank you.
What does he have on today?
I'm a big fan.
It says Lucky Charms.
It's a vintage Lucky Charms shirt. I'm a big fan.
Maybe I'm lucky today. I'm a big Bears fan. I think we could beat the Saints. But nonetheless.
Well, you better eat a big bowl of Lucky Charms, my friend.
Yeah.
Use whole milk. Pour some ice cream in there. Do something special.
Yeah, just melt down some ice cream.
Let it melt, right? I just want to say, what do the Bears have to trade to get Deshaun Watson? You know, I think we haven't signed Allen Robinson. Maybe we could do a little sign and trade, but what would we have to do for us to get Deshaun Watson over here?
I don't know if they have. I'm not going to sit here and lie and know exactly what their draft capital is, but you know that their draft pick is not going to be at the top of the draft because they're in the playoffs. So, you know, the Jets are, unless Jacksonville turns around and says, well, we want Deshaun Watson and we'll give the first, then that's the deal right there. And Houston will say, okay.
Right. Guys, it's not going to work. The reason why the Jets would be in the driver's seat is because they've got the number 2 pick, all right? They're not going to trade their quarterback away without having an answer at quarterback immediately, right? So no team can trade a quarterback that's going to be that attractive. Again, they're not going to want Jones. They're not going to want Sam Darnold. They're going to want the second overall pick so they can have Fields or whoever they want to select the next best quarterback behind Lawrence. So what can Chicago offer them? Because they won't be able to offer them a pick where they can take a quarterback. They don't want Trubisky or Foles. So why would you trade the quarterback away and then not immediately get an answer at quarterback? They'd be ridiculous not to do that. This kid's a transcendent talent. So you've got to get something that can easily replace a quarterback. They can't go into next year with no quarterback. How can Chicago get him? How can San Francisco get him? How can the Giants get him?
Well, the Giants would trade them Daniel Jones.
But then why not try to make it work out with Watson then?
Because maybe that relationship is not repairable.
And to be clear, the owner has come out and said they're meeting with Deshaun. They want to fix this.
So they better.
Don, the only way it happens, Michael's right. Daniel Jones can become appealing if they cannot make it work. That's the thing.
Right, but I'm going to try to make it work with a team that's going to get me somebody that's a guaranteed
big-time
quarterback.
Yeah, not someone we're trying to figure out.
Yeah, and that's why I think the Jets really could do something here because nobody else can give them that high a draft pick.
Let's go to Bill in Farmingville. What's up, Bill?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
How are you?
All right. I just want to make a comment. I mean, I've been watching the show since day one.
Thank
you. Good fan. Nice fan.
Thank you.
And I think that wardrobe protocol is a little wacky. Don comes in with a beautiful sweater. Michael has a beautiful sweater on. And here I am looking at Peter, and he's wearing a Lucky Charm shirt. I feel like I'm sitting in a frat room at a college.
Oh, first, come on, dog.
First of all, I would never be caught dead in a fraternity. Come on, you know me better than that.
Second of all, we're in a frat room. I mean, we're not doing anything special here. We're not splitting atoms. We're not curing cancer. We're just talking sports.
And by the way, Don's sweater isn't exactly formal wear. It's a nice casual sweater. And Michael looks like he borrowed a sweater from Dame Edna.
Dame Edna?
Wow. See, that's...
Are
Google
you kidding
that if you don't know what he's talking about, just so you can really get the insult.
If you want to see what this sweater looks like, Google a picture of Starsky and Hutch.
Right.
And that's exactly the sweater. You're going to come after me when Bill makes some salient points about the way you look.
Well, all I know is, Michael, when we talk about just transformative relationships, right?
Yeah.
Where I was close to John Filippelli. We'd make phone calls back and forth.
Yeah.
Spent many a drive home, literally door to door, talking to Jeff.
Yeah. John.
Right. And Peter is almost
John
getting
or
off the show.
He does not
college shirt.
That right? is amazing. Don, I had forgotten all about that. Remember the call was he had to wear a collared shirt?
Right.
Now he's wearing Lucky Charms.
So now Flip is dead to me. Peter's got this like amazing relationship with the guy, and now like rules that like that they had meetings about.
Meetings.
Phone calls were made
that they were not going to put him on the air. They were not going to put him on the air.
Yeah, they were going to basically have a blue cube whenever he talked. And now not only does he not have collared shirts on, he's wearing wrestling shirts, Lucky Charm shirts. It's amazing. I've never seen a relationship change so dramatically.
It is
two different people.
Transformative.
Well, first of all, Michael. A couple things.
Okay.
Number one, I told everyone I'm going back to formal wear starting Monday, but not because I had a conversation with Flip, because I have not. Number two, maybe Flip is upset by the fact that Don referred to him as Jeff. Jeff all these years, that could be a problem.
No, because tell me if you wouldn't get a little confused, Michael, especially when you're enraged at a person the way I am with Flip, is that my boss at MSG... is Jeff Filippi.
That's tough.
My boss at Yes is John Filippelli. So you can understand that, Peter, right?
That's you know what? It's fair. But the fact that you were talking about how your relationship went south, and you went, whenever I talk to Jeff, I mean
I don't
John.
Feel bad about it. I don't feel bad at all about it. I don't know what happened. I was kissing the ring at your barbecue. Next thing I know, I'm out. Peter's in to where he could do whatever he wants.
It is amazing. I don't know. I don't understand what happened with you.
I know. But, no, I
but
really don't
Peter,
know.
Peter should be teaching a class at the new school.
Hold on. Maybe part of the reason Flip hasn't said anything about me dressing like this at home is because I had started dressing so nicely in the studio, and now I'm working from home, and he's like, who cares? Screw it.
But I don't understand. It should be easier to dress nice when you're home. The closet's 5 feet away.
It's actually...
Really? And when I do Hot Stove, I'm in a jacket and tie. I'm home.
By the way, the funny thing is, if you guys do a wide shot here, you can see my suits... in the closet. But you'll also see a Mario Lemieux jersey on the lower level. But upper level, they're actually suits right
but
there.
I also don't understand Michael's defense of his sweater. All right, he's not Dane Edna, but he's a cop from a 70s television show.
Either way.
And somebody on Twitter just said my grandmother called. She wants a cardigan back. This is a beautiful sweater.
I loved the comment I saw earlier, which was, oh, looks like Michael wandered into the wrong side of the closet. Which... Jody, we found your sweater. sorry, Jody. It was your mother's old sweater you were saving as an heirloom.
All right, let's towel off because you're annoying me, and I'm going to say something that I'll regret, and then I'll have the whole weekend over it. So we'll take a timeout. We'll towel off on Yes and on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, so big wild card weekend coming up, and we have our picks later on in the hour. But before we even start, so since I toweled off, I've given this a lot of thought, and I am furious at Peter's unprovoked attack on my sweater, calling me Dame Edna, who Andrew had never heard of and then Googled. And he said, I can't believe it either. So here's what I'm going to tell you, Don. I'm not even going to talk to him. I'm going to tell you, Don, if it's the last thing I do this weekend, I will destroy and submarine his relationship that he has with Flip. Everything that he has done to make this what it is will now be absolutely napalmed. It's over. An unprovoked attack. I didn't call up. The caller called up and said about your sloppy Lucky Charm shirt.
Wow. This is so much. I simply thought it was funny.
Wrong.
You can admit it's an interesting sweater. It's a different sweater. I thought Don would laugh at the Dame Edna reference. He did.
Yes.
And I did not mean to hurt your feelings this way. Now, if you want to, I thought you were going to say you're going to be rooting your hardest against the football team, and you're going to rub it in my face if they lose.
He was going to do that anyway.
But thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don.
He was going to do that anyway. So obviously, it does nothing. So
it was a funny joke. It's worth it. You're over 40. You trim the tree.
What do you mean? I'm over 40.
Saying that if
we know you're
loses
over 40.
Flip as a friend for a funny joke,
then he's not a real friend,
right? Yeah, exactly. And if you could submarine it that easily, then he's not worth having as a friend anyway.
All right. So last week we were all 1-2. Don and I picked up 3 points because our one was our 3-point pick. Peter picked up 2 points, but Peter's in the lead at 27-24, 55 points overall.
Damn,
Don's
right
at 28-23. 54 points overall, and I'm at 26-25, 52 points overall. There's 6 big games this weekend.
Yeah.
You've got the Colts and the Bills. The Bills are 6.5-point favorites.
Correct.
The Rams and the Seahawks. Seahawks, 3.5-point favorites.
Sure there.
Tampa Bay in D.C. or wherever the heck they play their games.
Wow.
7.5-point favorites, the Bucks are. You got the Ravens and the Titans. Ravens, 2.5-point favorites over the Titans.
Titans.
The Bears and the Saints, the biggest line of the weekend, as the Saints are 10.5-point favorites at the Dome. And then you have the Browns and the Steelers, and the Steelers are 6.5-point favorites over the Browns. So, again, we'll make our picks at 5:45. Gentlemen, anything really jump out at you? What's the game that intrigues you the most?
Well, the game that I'm fascinated by, that I think is the most evenly matched, is Titans-Ravens.
Titans.
Because you've got a Titans team that upset the Ravens last year. But now the shoe's on the other foot, right? They're on the road, Baltimore. But they still are the favorites. Because I think Baltimore is the better team, but how much does last year play into the game this year? And I think Peter kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier. What does this do for Lamar Jackson if he loses this game? I'm not throwing him away by any stretch, but he didn't have the greatest of seasons, but he finished very well. Mm-hmm. He got to start winning some playoff games. Last year was a major disappointment. I thought the team had a chance to go to the Super Bowl.
Facing
the same team that knocked you out last year. I think it's a big game for Jackson. And if you take a look at how they've played down the stretch, he's been money. Remember that Cleveland game, how big that was? They're scoring tons of points. But still, it's in Tennessee, a Titans team that made the run last year. I think I'm really intrigued by that game.
I agree. I think it's a fascinating game. Don, I thought we were right there for you to pull a Don LaGreca. Come on, brother. I thought you were going to hit Lamar with a, it's time to start winning some playoff games, brother. I thought we were ripe for it, but I would agree with that. He's such a special player, but he's going to be feeling the pressure. I mean, last year was a disaster. The playoffs were an absolute disaster for them. And this is a tale of three seasons with the Ravens. They had the start of the season when it felt like we're talking about a Super Bowl team. The middle of the season when we thought, are they even going to make the playoffs? Mm-hmm. And then the end of the season, which was sort of a return to form and makes you think they could go win in Tennessee. Why not? So I find that game to be fascinating. I do not know whether the Rams or Seahawks are legitimate. You know, listen, I'm apt to at this point, if you have no faith in a Seahawks team in the playoffs, you seem like you're someone who hasn't learned lessons many times. Pete Carroll just seems to have this team ready in the playoffs no matter what. Obviously, their home field is non-existent this year, but still. And obviously, I am not going to sit here and lie. I believe the Tampa-Washington game will be a fascinating matchup. Number one, there's some real greatness on the line for Tom Brady. You know, at the stage in his career that he was when he left New England, and we've talked a lot about how not special that New England offense was last year. Well, you could say a lot about Tampa Bay and their inconsistency. You can't really say their offense hasn't been special. So I don't know if the word is out yet about whether or not Mike Evans will play. If they're down Mike Evans, that obviously hurts. But that receiving core, Evans, Godwin, Antonio Brown, who's come on now, has about 500 yards for the season and has picked it up.
Moments too,
and well, Gronk's up to 600 yards and six touchdowns. Gronk has become a legitimate target for Brady again. But they are playing against a really, I mean, Steve Young said on our show, the only team that Steve Young thought could basically be willed in the playoffs by defense alone is Washington. But can the Washington secondary keep up with that passing attack? Because They throw the ball deep a lot. And, of course, we have no idea whether Alex Smith is capable. And my personal prediction is we will see Taylor Heinicke in this game tomorrow. I don't think Alex is able to go the whole way.
And if you've watched Tom Brady throughout his career, the only time he really has trouble is when there are people in his face. That's why the Giants beat him twice in the Super Bowl. And Washington doesn't have to stunt in order to put pressure on him. They could just have their front line go after him without blitz. So
that's the key. If they could just send four guys and get him, then that could be a major problem. The one thing I don't want to tip my hand on who I'm picking in that game, because I am picking that game.
You are picking that game.
I am picking that game.
Okay.
But I'll tell you what I love, and I've been alluding to it during my BetMGM reads. Love the under. Some places have it at 45. Some places at 45.5. I have way too much respect for Washington's defense to think that Brady's going to light them up. But how's Washington going to score? I think that's going to be that game to me is like 14-10 kind of.
You just tipped your hand.
Well, I can go. It could be like a 20-3 game too.
Well,
like,
but you're right. But either way, that's under.
But I just don't see a lot of points being scored. And if you combine the amount of points they give up on average, it's under 45.
If Washington gets to 24, they can win that game.
And I don't see how they get to
24.
Their defense
is going to have to get them some scores.
But that's the X factor in all these picks, is that the what usually beats you, because I think we're all educated enough, and you'd look at the line kind of tells you. Vegas is usually right. Where usually goes haywire, turnovers, because you can't predict them, right? You're right. If Chase Young has a couple of pick sixes or Brady fumbles and scoops it up and gives them a quick score, that's stuff you can't factor. There's no guarantee it's going to happen that you predict it, but it could definitely throw everything. I think Washington can win this game for sure because, yeah, they could probably get turnovers, but can you predict it?
And the thing that's got to be a problem for Washington, though, and why Peter probably thinks that Heinicke's going to have to come in the game, is that the Bucs are built on blitzes. And they're just going to send everybody to get Brady.
Now, here's the thing, though.
Get Smith, I mean. So yeah. Smith can't move.
But it's an interesting thing, too, because if you can pick it up, they blitz linebackers as well. They send everybody. And they're really weak against the pass. So it's a fascinating matchup in that regard. But can you guys imagine the level of pressure
on Taylor Heinicke to play in this game. And I believe there's a world in which they use Taylor Heinicke a lot this week because they're concerned about Alex Smith and that defense. And if they were to somehow get past Tampa, Alex Smith would play again. But I just think they're going to be that's a lot of JPP. You know how good JPP was this year?
Yeah.
9 sacks.
Yeah.
And Dominican Sue had 6.5. And then they blitz their linebackers. So Tampa brings a lot. I will say, though, am I biased? I think that's one of the more interesting games of the weekend. I think it'll be a fun one.
Now, going back to the Ravens and the Titans, which is an interesting game, the Titans' defense has been awful. But they're going to sell out and try to stop the run because that's what the Ravens do. They run. And every time the Ravens are forced to throw in the postseason, they can't do it because he's not a great passer. One other thing that we forgot to mention about that game, you know where you could watch that game?
Right
on ESPN.
Oh.
Yeah, that's Sunday at 1:05 on ESPN. Sunday, 1:05 at ESPN.
What? Don't you worry.
Promo.
Michael, please, if you think that we're not going to talk at 6 p.m. during ENN about where people can watch these games, come on.
Now, another game that I find interesting is the Colts and the Bills. The Colts couldn't get away from a Jaguar team last week. They couldn't run away from them. A Jaguar team that wanted to lose. And the Bills have been unbelievable. And obviously it's a weekend in January in Buffalo, so the weather's not going to be perfect. You've got Phillip Rivers, who's played most of his career in San Diego and now in a dome. How's he going to react to cold weather?
That's the question, right? Because since 2013, Rivers has played 2 playoff games. Those were those 2 playoff games in 2018. If you remember, they lost to New England, got destroyed by the Patriots. There's not a lot of experience recently. In the last 7 years, he's played 2 playoff games. And Rivers, who's 39 years old, has not looked good in the last couple of games. He only threw for 164 yards against Jacksonville, and they needed that game at the time. Now, they were up 20-0, and they were cruising, but still, they won the game comfortably, but it wasn't overly impressive. He threw for 270 against Pittsburgh the week before that. So I think the Bills have the better quarterback. The Bills, outside of the Hail Mary, Peter, the Bills are riding a 10-game winning streak.
Yep.
They won six in a row. Their only loss in the last 10 was the game in Arizona.
And now I like that they have that loss there.
Now, is there
you feel so much pressure with the 10-game winning streak, but they don't have that. But on to your point, they basically do.
Yeah.
Is there anybody within the sound of a voice that thinks the Bears could go into the Dome and beat New Orleans? I don't see it happening. I think the only question is New Orleans going to blow them out? Now, the spread is 10.5.
Yeah.
And I think that Sean Payton did something really interesting. That game was also going to be broadcast on Nickelodeon. And he said he is willing to be slimed if they win the game.
Is that true?
Yes.
I did not know that. Wow.
Yeah. So that's a game that's probably the one that will probably be the least competitive.
But at the same time, like, does anyone love this? Like, at the beginning of the year, it felt like the Saints. People loved the Saints. And then they played well without Breeze. But I feel like there's not a ton of momentum around them, which is interesting because they ended the season with a close loss to the Chiefs, a blowout of the Vikings, and a blowout of the Panthers. So you should feel good if you're rooting for the Saints. But yeah. I don't feel like anyone's been talking about them as a real favorite.
I'm staying away. 10.5 is a little bit too much for me. But I watched a lot of Bears-Packers. That was my 3-point play last week. Bears came out offensively, did well, first drive, touchdown. But they just couldn't figure Rodgers out. And that was a game in Chicago. And even though I would not put Breeze right now on the same level as Rodgers, but in the dome, fast track, I just the Bears aren't going to get a stop when they need it.
Yeah, I don't think so. But I mean, the chance the Bears have is that they do rush the passer. And if they could get to Breeze, you know, Breeze is not the same quarterback that he used to be. He had a pretty good year, missed a lot of games with injury, with the rib crack. I get that. And, you know, he's going to the Hall of Fame. But if you get to him, it's going to be a problem. And I mean, that's not cracking any nuclear code right here. If you get to any quarterback,
right,
if you put pressure on any quarterback, they're not the same. They're just not.
But
and that's the Bears' only
there.
Chance.
They got to get there. You're right. But and I think the 10.5 just is a little bit too much for me because I think the Bears can hang. It just comes down to when they're going to need a stop. I think they're going to take care of business. They're going to score. And even
well,
if Breeze is not Rodgers, they'll score.
They played, what was that week?
They played earlier, like first month of the season, 26-23 New Orleans.
Right, yeah. And the other game, the final game, the Browns and the Steelers, I'm locked in on this one. I'm interested in it. And it's a COVID-impacted game. No head coach for the Browns, and he is their offensive mastermind. And he's the guy who calls the plays. He's the guy who's made Baker Mayfield better. Stefanski's the reason. It's not that much of a different team than last year. Just the coach is different. Kitchens and then Stefanski. Yeah. Stefanski is a reason for their success. He's out. One of their big offensive linemen, out. Can they withstand all that and beat the Steelers? And I think the Steelers have hit the reset button. They had that rough stretch. I think they're very, very good. And they pretty much owned the Browns over the last decade, which I understand the Browns have stunk. But even though they didn't even play Roethlisberger last week in a game that the Browns had to win, they just lost by 2 points.
And the Browns and the Browns needed that game. You know, so you can't even just discount that the Browns didn't need. They did need it. And I'll give the Steelers credit for this. They were on fumes. But they still were able to beat Indianapolis. Then they effectively got the bye in week 17 because they didn't play anybody. And I think that's the difference. We can't forget this team was 11-0. All right? And then the COVID stuff started happening. They got exhausted. They got the drops. Guys were dropping passes. They just needed that week off and never got it. Roethlisberger certainly needed it. But when they had to get the win to solidify the division, they got it against Indianapolis. They still played hard without their starters in Week 17. I think we're going to see a team that's a lot more like the 11-0 team than we saw down the stretch. And they've been there, and they've done that. And I like the Browns, and I'd love to see the Browns win. It's been such a long time, man, that they've mattered. But I think this is a really, really tough spot for Cleveland. No head coach. And I thought Danny from Long Island made a great point about what happened when the Giants couldn't have their offensive coordinator, if you remember, with Jason Garrett in that Cleveland game. And then Freddie Kitchens is going for it on fourth down in the red zone and all that. They'll have a game plan and everything will work out because they're very analytically driven. But, Michael, you know there's going to be times there's going to be a decision that has to be made. And I feel a lot more comfortable Stefanski making it than anybody else.
Our good buddy Trey Wingo has an interesting stat about that, the Buck football team game. He said Rob Gronkowski has 12 career TD grabs in the playoffs. That's the second most in NFL history. If Gronk catches a pass, a TD pass from Tom Brady, he and Brady will break a tie with Jerry Rice and Joe Montana for the most postseason pass TDs by any quarterback pass catching duo ever.
Hmm.
So we'll be looking at that.
Don, you know I've been thinking about Michael's sweater. You know how he should have responded to me? Don, you know what he should have said?
Wow. Yeah. You just love Tiger. Sniff him. Sniff him dead.
No, I was not going to say that. I was going to say he should have said, this aggression will not stand, man. Because he looks a little like the dude.
Yeah, he does look like the dude.
See, but you don't understand one thing. This is an homage to the great Taylor Swift. There's a song, Cardigan.
I didn't understand the joke because Carlin texted me. And said, didn't know you were hosting the show with Taylor Swift today.
How would you?
So you have no idea about music other than rap.
It's rap or Taylor Swift. That's it. That's the entire.
Why would two grown men have a working knowledge of Taylor Swift's music, honestly? Now, the reason I know the New York song is because it's the beginning of Secret Life of Pets, and that's been in heavy rotation in my car.
But you can't say that only young teeny boppers know Taylor Swift. Her music is beyond that.
No, I don't think it is.
But no,
I am a big fan of Taylor Swift because she's a vindictive person who has a very, very extensive laminated list, but she acts on it by writing vicious songs about the people that have crossed her.
I like Taylor Swift as a human being, and I enjoy a handful of her songs. I don't know Cardigan.
The only reason I know Cardigan now kind of makes sense is the commercial we've been airing. I think I'll go with a cardigan. I just thought that's what she wore when it was cold. I had no idea there was a song Cardigan. We are not in her demo. Now, you can like it, Michael. I like the fact that you have an eclectic musical taste, but we're not in her demo. And for you to think she's vindictive, that's a reason why to like the person, but to like the music.
I think her music's excellent. She's a brilliant artist.
Well, that New York song, I do like that song.
And I like a lot of her songs.
But I'm not going to apologize for not knowing her catalog.
You know what Gary Lynch just tweeted? It's unbelievably hurtful, but funny. Wearing that sweater, Michael K. has now moved up 6 million spots on the COVID-19 vaccine list.
Well, you don't be surprised that that's an angle, too.
That's a good point.
I applied to get on the list today.
Now, Jason writes, gather around while Grandpa K. reads a story about the glory days of the Yankees.
Hey. 60's around the corner.
Oh, no, it's not around the corner. It's down the block.
You can see him coming.
All right, you know who's coming up next, right? The great. You don't say his name without saying the great.
He hasn't been on since Peter flew solo.
What a great time.
Did we ever get the numbers for that, by the way?
Oh, that's a great question.
Steve writes, does Michael have a candy jar full of Werther's Originals and loose chains next to the microphone to give to his grandkids during the commercial breaks?
Right. See, what Michael's doing, he's got a glass. My grandmother did this. A glass of seltzer. But she'd work on it all day. So she would have like aluminum foil over the top of it. So nothing would get
bubbly.
In. Yeah, Michael's got that going on. But
Vince Pellegrini goes, when did Kay become a golden girl? Anthony Bruno goes, where did you get it? I need a birthday gift for my grandmother. Oh, they're coming in fast and furious.
See, and I didn't say anything close to that. I just said Dame Edna.
Which half the audience didn't get. Because most of our audience thinks that like everything started in 1990.
Michael made a sweater from his grandmother's dollies.
It does look like dolly material.
But that was weird, that one.
KLP writes, this looks like the thing you put under a throw rug to prevent it from slipping.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Adam Tattlebaum says, looks like something out of Lou Carnesecca's closet.
Well, that's a compliment.
Yes.
Marie Lopez goes, love you, Mike, but in a word, troubling. Anyway, we move on. The great Ryan Clark will join us in just a moment right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Michael looks like he borrowed a sweater from Dame Edna.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.